Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
One way or another, NATO's pretty kaput, but the idea that Donald Trump would sort of officially say, well, we're walking away, would just have the most dire ramifications for all of Europe and the rest of us.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
From Wandjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, what is the role of countries like Australia and Canada, so-called middle powers, in ensuring that the world follows its norms and rules, especially at a time of war?
You know, if you compare the world we live in today, some would go back to 1945, some would go back to 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall, but it is clearly that all of us are witnessing something fundamentally different.
You're about to hear that interview with the Canadian Finance Minister. He's in town with his boss, the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, for an official visit to Australia. We're also going to hear from the Federal Opposition why Liberal frontbencher Andrew Hastie thinks the rules-based order is no more.
We're in a new stage of history. After World War II, it was the United States who built the international order. And I think that that construct is defunct, in a sense.
From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Bonjour, tout le monde. Look forward to taking your questions in a moment, but I would like to maybe observe right at the start, already thank Prime Minister Albanese and the Australian people for the warm welcome and affording us so much time for our important discussions. Okay, to turn.
Well, the Canadian Prime Minister is here in Australia today, meeting with business leaders before tomorrow heading to Canberra. He'll be meeting the Prime Minister and also giving an address to Parliament. He's riding a real high after a speech earlier this year that caught the attention of middle power nations like Australia.
What does it mean for middle powers to live the truth? Well, first, it means naming reality. Stop invoking rules-based international order as though it still functions as advertised. Call it what it is, a system of intensifying great power rivalry where the most powerful pursue their interests using economic integration as coercion.
And that is the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, speaking at Davos earlier this year. Well, his Finance Minister, François-Philippe Champagne, is travelling with him here in Australia, and he's got a really busy schedule. So last night, our host, Sally Sara, pre-recorded an interview with him from her home. She was there. He was in Sydney ahead of a really busy day today. And they covered a whole range of things. The role of middle powers amid this changing dynamic to the global rules-based order. Also, the conflict in Iran and Canada's trade with Australia. Here's the interview that we ran this morning.
What is the role of middle powers such as Canada and Australia in ensuring the continuation of what's described as the rules-based order?
You know, if you compare the world we live in today, some would go back to 1945, some would go back to 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall, but it is clearly that all of us are witnessing something fundamentally different in the world history. And therefore, if you look over time, middle powers like Canada and certainly Australia have played a key role to build a rule-based order because this is how we can prosper.
How do you view the actions taken by the United States and Israel against Iran in terms of the international rules-based order?
Well, it's a situation that is fast evolving. Obviously, we're monitoring the situation very closely. The Prime Minister of Canada spoke on behalf of the nation. We have been expressing our views, which is somewhat similar to what we have seen from Australia in terms of their public comments with respect to the situation. Obviously, this is, I was just, you know, we just came back from India, and clearly we're going to be monitoring that and working with our partners around the world to make sure that we can protect our citizens and monitor as closely as one can that very volatile situation.
Are the actions of the US and Israel against Iran, are those actions consistent with international law? And if they're not lawful, should middle powers such as Canada and Australia speak out and or take action?
Well, let's say that Iran has been at the center of the instability that we have seen in the region for quite some time, I would even say for decades. And therefore, we have seen the action taken by the United States and Israel, in the case of Israel, respecting their fundamental right to defend themselves. And certainly the Americans have decided to take action to basically stop what we have seen over the last few decades.
But was there any risk of an imminent attack, and was there any firm evidence that Iran was getting close to having access to a nuclear weapon?
Well, I won't go to some intelligence assessment. I'd leave that to the expert. But I think it is well understood by people, and we have seen evidence again and again of that regime, which has been oppressing its people, being at the epicenter of instability, and has fueled really the instability that we have seen in the region for quite some time. I mean, listen, I was foreign minister when Iran shut down PS752, which is this civilian airliners at the time. And I can recall my personal interaction. And this is a regime which had very little respect for their citizens and human life. And therefore, we...
But does that mean taking military action is legal under international law, or are you saying it's acceptable anyway?
Well, although I'm a lawyer, I'll leave that maybe to the legal experts to comment on that or to assess the situation from a legal perspective. But beyond that, I think that everyone would appreciate that Iran, and it's not something new, like I said, Iran has been at the center of the instability that we have seen in the region, as we have seen from the United States declaring that they had their chance to redress and take some action. They failed to do that. And therefore, we have seen the United States and Israel taking action in order to put a stop to that.
Your visit to Australia, you are looking to increase trade ties between Australia and Canada and also increase investment. You've said that foreign investment in Canada is at its highest levels since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
What would a successful visit to Australia look like on the investment front?
There's really three legs. You know, there's the trade, there's the investment, there's the defense cooperation. When it comes to trade, I mean, if you look at the bilateral trade, it's fairly modest. I mean, you're talking about in Canadian dollar around $6 billion. So one would certainly agree that we can be more ambitious in our level of trade. There's much for us to learn from each other, to work more closely together.
Finally, on defence, Canada and Australia are both part of the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. Your Prime Minister has expressed an interest in deepening information sharing between the two countries. What could that involve?
Well, you know, the Five Eyes is one of the things that brings us together. I mean, you have obviously the G20, the Commonwealth, the G7+. But in the Five Eyes context, we know that this is a very unique alliance, you know, where we share intelligence. So it's certainly a time now to look forward together and say, you know, how can we build a stronger base with that, with our Australian friend, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States? I think we live in a world which is fast changing. The role of intelligence will be key. And certainly when you have nations like Canada, Australia, and our other Five Eyes partner, I think there's a role for us to play in this new world to protect our citizens and advance our interests.
And that is Canada's Finance Minister, François-Philippe Champagne. Well, let's double back to that first question about the rules-based order and hear from someone who thinks that that notion has ended. Andrew Hastie is the Shadow Minister for Industry and Sovereign Capability. He also served in the Australian Defence Force over in the Middle East. Here's what Sally asked him this morning.
Yesterday you said that you think the world is governed by power and you don't think the global rules-based order exists anymore. Government frontbencher Claire O'Neill called those comments unhelpful and overblown. Do you believe that the actions of the US and Israel defy diplomatic orthodoxy?
Look, I think we're in a new stage of history. After World War II, it was the United States who built the international order, the international institutions. That's why the United Nations is headquartered in New York. And I think that that construct is defunct, in a sense. We've got a different president who is mercantilist when it comes to his sort of economics. I think he's an apex opportunist. We've seen him strike Nigeria, Venezuela. He's attempting regime change now in Iran. But we've also seen the rise of autocracies. China's flexing its muscles. We've seen Russia invade Ukraine illegally and immorally. And Iran, of course, was sponsoring Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis in the Middle East. So this is a very different stage of history. And my concern foremost by making those comments is to wake Australia up. We've only got 30-odd days worth of fuel. If our shipping lines are cut, then our whole economy could grind to a halt very quickly. Never mind the fact that our industrial base is also shrinking, and that makes us vulnerable to world events. So my concern is for our country and making sure that we're resilient and self-sufficient.
We've got Mark Carney, the Canadian Prime Minister, in the country. His speech at Davos earlier this year about the role and his view of the rise of the middle powers attracted a lot of attention. How do you see the role of middle powers such as Australia, not only in peacetime, but in situations like this?
Yeah, I think middle powers absolutely have a role. But middle powers are middle powers because they have a level of power. And my concern is that Australia's industrial power, our military power, is shrinking. And you can't just rely upon diplomatic power. They're just words at the end of the day. You've got to back them up. Mark Carney's speech, I think, was excellent. I read it, and it was very powerfully written. But it delivered a powerful message, and that is that the world that, you know, we've enjoyed for the last 80 years is now gone. And that was the backdrop to my comments yesterday.
So what does that mean for Australia's strategic and defence relationship with the United States? Do we need to spend more, do more to stand on our own two feet, or look the other way if the US is doing things that we don't like?
I think the message is we need to be able to stand on our two feet. I think that was the message out of Ukraine. I think that's the message from Israel's positioning since October 7th, 2023. I think that critical to our future is a strong industrial base. We need to be able to make things, not everything, but we need to be able to make things essential to our national life and our survival as a country. And we need to look at our supply chains as well, sovereign supply chains. I mentioned fuel stocks. Our country runs on diesel. All those trucks that deliver Woolies and Coles, groceries, pharmaceuticals across the country to the outer metro, to regional parts of the country, they would all stop running if we had a massive fuel shock. And that is still a possibility. I mean, there's going to be price shocks for fuel in Mandurah in Western Australia, where I live. We're already seeing it above $2 at some Bowsers. We're going to see shipping logistics price shocks, and then risk premium price shocks as well. We're all going to get hit as Australians. And again, it just brings me back to this central point. We need to think about how we can make ourselves more resilient as a country.
The Liberal Party's review into its federal election defeat last year was tabled by the Prime Minister in Parliament yesterday. Do you think that the party, the Liberal Party, is failing to learn the lessons of this election loss?
I don't think so. I think I'll have a look at that review. It was a bit of a boss move from the Prime Minister tabling our own review.
What do you think of that?
Ha, you know, he likes theatre. He had a twinkle in his eye when he did that. Obviously, it was leaked, and there was a bit of stagecraft from him. But Angus Taylor, Jane Hume, in their initial press conference upon taking the leader and deputy leader roles, acknowledged that we got it wrong. But we're not going to live in the past, we're going to live in the future, and our mission is to restore Australian standard of living. We're going backwards under Labor, and also to protect our way of life. And that's why we've been pursuing the ISIS sympathiser case this week, because our way of life is being challenged.
And why that instead of cost of living the first couple of days?
Well, I said restore our standard of living and protect our way of life. They're two pillars of our platform. And just because commentators like Dennis Shanahan don't like our question time strategy, doesn't mean it's wrong. Australians care about those two things, and there's only a certain amount of time in a day, so let's see what happens today. But certainly we'll be talking about the economy a lot going forward.
Liberal frontbencher Andrew Hastie there. He is the Shadow Minister for Industry and sovereign capability. Well, let's turn back to the conflict in Iran and discuss some of the justifications being used by the US and Israel to wage this war. Before that, an update on just what's happened in the last 24 hours. The breaking news this morning was that the US would start escorting oil and gas tankers through the Strait of Hormuz. Our business and economics reporter, Evan Lucas, filled us in on that development.
So the oil front at the moment is all over the shot. Again, I'm watching it live as we speak, and I do want to put this out there as a massive caveat for when I say these questions to you, Sally. Oil has been moving in the last 2 hours since we've been on air through $5, both up and down. The reasons for that, and that's probably the questions you're asking here, is firstly, this morning we have seen that the US president has announced two major numbers. Now, they are on Truth Social, so we need to also put that into caveat, but I will read it out. If necessary, the US state's Navy will begin escorting tankers through the Strait of Hormuz as soon as possible. No matter what the United States will encounter, the free flow of energy to the world will happen. The United States' economic and military might is the greatest on earth. That was the first part. So we now know that the US is going to use the Navy to guarantee movement of ships through the Strait of Hormuz. He then also later put out this on Truth Social, because the other big issue is the insurance of ships out there. And he has announced that the International Development Finance Corporation of the United States will insure and guarantee ships travelling through the Persian Gulf.
Evan Lucas there. Then, news that Israel had reportedly also carried out strikes on the office of the Iranian president in Tehran, and it also claims that it had struck a meeting of the Assembly of Experts. Now, this is a group of Iranian officials tasked with choosing the next Ayatollah. On top of that, more than 800 people in Iran have now been killed in strikes, and the United Nations is urging an investigation of that deadly attack on a school at the start of the war that Iran says has now killed more than 160 people. Over in Washington, President Donald Trump was speaking from the White House, and he offered a somewhat confusing explanation for America's strikes on Iran. He says Tehran was about to attack Israel.
Based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first, and I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand, but Israel was ready and we were ready, and we've had a very, very powerful impact because virtually everything they have has been knocked out now. Their missile count.
Now, if you remember yesterday's episode, that contradicts the statement from his own Secretary of State, Marco Rubio.
The threat was that we knew that if Iran was attacked, and we believed they would be attacked, that they would immediately come after us.
See the difference? One saying Israel was going to attack, the other saying Iran was going to strike first. It's all a bit confusing. One claim that is being heavily disputed by the international nuclear watchdog is Donald Trump's insistence that Iran was developing nuclear weapons capable of reaching the United States. Sally put that claim to the former head of nuclear verification at the International Atomic Energy Agency, Tarek Ralph.
That is completely false. The IAEA Director General's report of 31st of May last year clearly said Iran does not have a structured nuclear weapon development program. And then 12 days later, Iran was bombed. And then the IAEA issued another report in September, and the last report was on the 27th of February. None of these reports state that Iran was working on a nuclear weapon program. All of that ended in 2003 or thereabouts.
So what was the state of Iran's nuclear program in the most recent report?
The Director General reported that 7 facilities had been bombed and 13 had not been bombed. The 7 facilities that had been bombed related more to enriched uranium and the manufacturing of uranium metal and so on, whereas the Bushehr nuclear power plant and related facilities, which really had nothing to do with enriched uranium, were not bombed.
From a nuclear perspective, shortly before these military action by the US and Israel, was Iran a danger to the international community in a nuclear sense?
Not really. The IAEA was monitoring all uranium production in Iran, and the IAEA reported that it had 440.1 kilograms of, for example, 60% enriched uranium. So that was the level of detail that the IAEA inspectors were monitoring at the three uranium enrichment facilities, which are generally referred to as sensitive nuclear facilities. The rest of the facilities really are not that sensitive. So the IAEA was doing its job. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action was working until the U.S. withdrew from it in May 2018. And then starting in June 2019, over the next few years, Iran walked back in several stages its limitations under the JCPOA, but gave advance notice to the IAEA.
Is there a possibility that the inspectors weren't able to see everything that they needed to see and Iran was more progressed on the nuclear front than the inspectors were able to see?
IAEA inspectors were stationed permanently in Iran and they inspected the enrichment facilities on a daily basis. They examined all the records. And if Israel and the United States didn't find a hidden facility, the IAEA wouldn't be able to find it. So we haven't heard any reports that I have come across where the U.S. or Israel are accusing Iran of having a clandestine facility hidden somewhere at the bottom of a mountain.
Had Iran been blocking access to inspectors from the IAEA?
Well, as part of its steps to walk back the limitations of the July 2015 JCPOA, Iran stopped giving access to centrifuge component manufacturing, which normally is not a safeguardable activity under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So Iran was living up to its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Will this military action by the United States and Israel, will it make the international community safer from any possible nuclear threat from Iran?
Well, there wasn't any nuclear weapons threat from Iran to begin with, so all this does is it sends the wrong message. That had Iran nuclear weapons in its possession, it likely would not have been attacked. Nobody talks about attacking North Korea because North Korea developed nuclear weapons. So apparently both Israel and the United States did not want Iran to end up at some point in the future like North Korea and therefore immune to attack. So this was a good time, particularly for Israel to attack Iran and to work further towards its Greater Israel program by annexing more of the West Bank and Gaza and destroying the last remaining country in the region that posed any military threat to it.
And you were just listening to an interview with the former head of nuclear verification and security policy coordination at the International Atomic Energy Agency, Tariq Rauf. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. Plenty of interviews there from Sally Sara, produced by our crack team at Radio National Breakfast. And today's Breakfast Wrap was produced by Josie Asher. Now, if you want to listen to more interviews like this, I've got a tip for you. Every morning at 6 a.m. on Radio National and also ABC Listen, you can catch Radio National Breakfast live with Sally Sara. A whole string of interviews covering international affairs, domestic political stories out of Canberra, and also stories that are making news right across the country. That is live every morning on the wireless and also the app. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. We'll see you tomorrow.